In the June edition of History Today, we've got a fascinating article by Guy Atkins. It's called The Edwardian Social Network, and it draws parallels between the social media of today and postcards of the Edwardian period and the late Victorian period. Guy's with us today, and this is an extraordinary phenomenon, but the parallels are very real, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And the more you think about it, the more the parallels are and the links are extraordinary, really, because the postcard obviously is a short way of communicating
with parallels to Twitter.
With parallels to Twitter, but what makes it extraordinary is the fact that at the time you could, in Edwardian Britain, particularly in the urban areas, send a postcard in the morning and it would arrive by early afternoon. And it was possible even to then reply to that postcard and for it to return by the evening. So you were able to, there was this instant element to the postcard on top of its brevity, which of course is very, very similar to a tweet or a text message.
So the whole phenomenon of what we're calling the Edwardian social network is dependent upon the infrastructure that's there of the post office.
Yes, that's right. So in the centre of London, 1908, there were up to 12 deliveries a day coming out of St Martin's Le Grand in the city. In the suburbs, there would still be 6 posts a day.
And why were they so keen on having so many? What was the purpose of it? What was the thinking behind that?
Well, I think the postcard made the most of how proud people were of the post office. This was something that Britain was proud of compared to other countries, and the number of people that were working in the post office was extraordinary. So by 1913-14, you had 250,000 people working for the post office, which was the peak in terms of labour force of the post office in its history. So it is a very unique time. At the same time, people are becoming increasingly literate. The postcard has this extra advantage compared to a letter because it is half the price of sending a letter. So more people over time became comfortable in using it.
And what sort of price are we talking about with the postcard?
So for a letter, clearly we still had the penny post. But for the postcard, you could send it for half that, so for a half pence. So between 1870, when it was introduced, to 1918, the price of sending a postcard was just a half penny. And what's also important to sort of appreciate in the development of the postcard is that it was initially a very dull object. And I've got this one here that was the official postcard.
Mm-hmm. So there was
one standard postcard. There were different thicknesses of card that you could choose.
And that would affect the price of postage?
Not the postage. The postage would still be half penny. But what this meant was that it was something that had real limitations in terms of how people could use it. Yeah. You had to have one side reserved for the address. Mm-hmm. That was the front. Any message had to go on the back of the postcard. Only by 1894. Did the post office relax this restriction so that people could publish private postcards that could have a half pence stamp attached? Because in that first postcard, the stamp's already on the postcard. Okay. So after 1894, you get this liberalisation of the postcard market. Still significant restrictions compared to other countries. So Germany was well ahead of the game in terms of the size of postcards that they were allowed and the freedom that publishers had. So in Britain, even up to 1899, there were still small postcards. I've got one here which shows the image having to jostle with the message.
And that's the image
on one side.
Holborn Viaduct, which is still very much with us today, and you can tell from that where you are.
The quality of the printing is still very good, but it couldn't do justice to, as Henneke Heaton, who was the sort of post office reformer, who was the real pain for the post office because he was forever asking for better and better conditions for people to be able to use the post. There's a great phrase of his where he said that the postcard that size couldn't do justice to Arundel Castle, to Windermere. So it was the postcard had to get bigger. It was only in 1899 when we reached the stage where we've got the postcard the size that we recognise today.
So there was a real aesthetic about this. The promotion of this was an aesthetic one.
Very much. And of course, because it was in the private, because once the private sector were involved, yeah, publishers would compete intensively to bring out the most interesting designs, the most collectible items as well. Because as we move into the 20th century, the collecting bug really caught off.
Photography is established by then.
Photography is established. The printing is getting cheaper and cheaper. Because Britain was behind, it was Germany where the printing was based.
As is so often the case.
And so British publishers, by and large, would import the finished article from Saxony. And at the same time, we have these moments where postcard publishers are changing the form to make their market share increase. So Frederick Hartmann, who in many can claim, like many, to have invented the final postcard, realised that if you put a line down the back of the postcard so that you had the address and the message on one side, leaving a full side for the image, the postcard became an even more attractive object that people would want to use and collect.
And that's the absolutely key development in the popularisation of the postcard.
I think that's the key.
And it's still the form that we find it in today.
It's still the form where people are expecting to send the postcard. What I find quite interesting is that in galleries, for example, the postcards often now don't have the line down the back because it's not expected that they'll be sent. It's something that will be kept and put on a fridge door.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when does that development happen, that separation? And have you got an example of one of the first ones?
Yes. People could write... The post office had already granted the right to sign your name on the address side, but were reluctant to encourage people to put too much on there because they wanted an efficient postal service. They thought that people sorting the mail would be drawn into reading people's messages. So it was 1902, the middle of 1902, when Hartmann started producing these postcards.
And Hartmann is based where?
Well, he is based about 30 yards from
Holborn Viaduct.
Holborn Viaduct, okay. Which is why that one, I wanted to buy it when I saw it. Okay. Because from that moment, other publishers decided that made sense for them. So you had a copycat product. So the postcard became that uniform form of having the front for the picture, which people still wrote on and marked things on, but the back had that divide.
And that front becomes a canvas in that sense.
And that image then becomes the front. So previously the front had been the address side. Yeah. Now we have the front being the image.
And of course what we have there, drawing further parallels with today's social media, is that you have a language that develops, a grammar that develops in this small, finite medium, very finite medium, which you can't do a lot with, but you can use various tools, various grammars, various techniques to make your point.
Yes, and the more you look at these cards, the more languages emerge. Yes, there are the abbreviations, like we would have today in a tweet or a text.
Like LOL.
Like LOL, calling people by a single initial as opposed to their full name, not introducing a postcard with Dear X.
So this gets rid of the formality of the letter that's been established for so long.
The formality of the letter is very much challenged and is another reason why people want to engage with the form of the card. You don't have to sign off. It can be anonymous even in a postcard, as well as at the same time it being a cheaper alternative. And that was something which did concern people when it was introduced. Lord Mayor of London in 1870 wanted to make people aware of the dangers of people sending in obscene messages into people's homes. And there were a series of court cases where people were accused of doing just that. And it was seen to be something that needed to be punished severely. I always laugh when I see these stories because, of course, the postcard message is then reprinted in the newspaper that's reporting the court case.
So have you got examples of these innovative uses of language, of symbolism?
Yes. One of the most... One common way of playing with the form of the postcard was to angle the stamp, which was known as the language of stamps. In many ways, it was like the emoticon today in the smiley face, in that it lightened the tone of the message. Obviously, it's hard to look back and see which ones are deliberate compared to which ones were just slippages.
Just askew. Yeah.
But it's quite clear that this was something that people did deliberately. And there were even language of stamp cards that were then produced to give people a guide as to what that code might mean. Those cards weren't definitive. Those cards were typically used by putting an X next to the message that you were replacing. But certainly the language of stamps was one of the most interesting. It was one way of playing with the postcard. Another was writing in code as well. So people would take advantage of the cheap postage, enjoy perhaps even trying to avoid the eyes of other people in the household, the postal workers en route, and so would use Morse code, would use shorthand, would use various substitution codes, replacing a letter with a number, mirror writing even. Mm. Sometimes serious, sometimes not so, sometimes simply because it was enjoyable to have that private code.
Do we have a time when this comes to an end, in a sense, this kind of great period of postcard sending?
Yes, we do.
Because it seems to be very much before the First World War. Yeah,
it is. And there are a number of factors which lead to the end of what postcard collectors would call the golden age of postcards before the First World War. First of all, the cost increases. So in 1918, it goes up to a penny. It goes up again later. We have the rise of the telephone as something that people will use to communicate for those short messages, particularly in the 20s. The post office isn't as effective after the war. The number of deliveries a day never recovers to the years just before the First World War. And the collecting... the collecting craze didn't last. That wasn't something that was as important to people as before the First World War. We didn't have these big competitions that the publishers would organise.
Well, thank you, Guy. Thank you very much. An absolutely fascinating article. And for those who want to see some examples of these postcards, it's in the June issue of History Today. And there are also some more on our website as well. So thank you, Guy.
My pleasure.